Hey y'all. So when it comes to bodies, weight loss is not really something that I'm pursuing right now. But as you know, one of Vanessa's family members has been taking a GLP-1 medication, and it's worked really well for him. So if that is part of your journey, you should check out the Row Body Program. Row provides access to the most popular weight loss shots on the market. Row's partner handles all the insurance paperwork to help get the medication covered. If eligible for medication, patients have access to their provider on demand for any questions. Go to ro.co/infamous. Sign up today and you'll pay just $99 for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/infamous.
Campsite Media.
There's nothing we do that's bad, and I think cult implies bad. And there's nothing that we do that is bad.
This is Infamous, a production of Campsite Media and Sony Music Entertainment. I'm Vanessa Grigoriadis. So last week, you heard from India, and she had a lot of very revealing things to say about the way Nexium operated when I was talking to them. We decided to add this episode to talk a bit more about Claire Bronfman and the way her fortune affected Nexium. So you'll be hearing from me and from my producer, Shoshi Shmulevitz. Hey, Shoshi.
Hi. It's weird to be on this side of the microphone.
Yeah. Shoshi is generally helping write all these episodes and make them sound as good as they have been. But this week, we're going to talk about Claire, and Shoshi has a bit of a connection with Claire.
Sort of roundabout connection. Claire's late father, Edgar Bronfman, the billionaire, was a huge philanthropist in the Jewish community. And basically, Edgar Bronfman paid for my trip to Israel when I was 18 years old.
Oh, my God. Was that like a find your roots trip?
Yeah. So there's this thing called Birthright, which sends American Jews to Israel, free two-week trips to Israel when they're like in college. And it's a lot of pro-Israel propaganda, which you don't necessarily have to listen to because you're hungover all the time because they also take you out drinking and encourage you to sleep with other Jews. That's the trip. I think they're still doing it, actually. Okay. I don't know if the Bronfmans are still funding it. But I just want to say that Edgar Bronfman was not just, you know, money bags in the Jewish community. He also was the president of the World Jewish Congress.
What's that?
The idea of it is basically it's like the diplomatic arm of world Jewry. What Edgar Bronfman did was he was president of the World Jewish Congress in like the 80s, I think. At the time, it was really, really bad to be a Jew in the Soviet Union. And lots of Jews desperately wanted to leave. Edgar Bronfman was basically doing diplomacy with Soviet leaders. So he did a lot of important
stuff.
So
he's a significant, he's a significant figure. He's not just a philanthropist.
Yeah, he really did big things.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in the case of the Bronfmans, I had been aware of Seagram's, obviously, like everybody. But I didn't realize that they had this history as bootleggers, that they were basically, what, Russian immigrants who came to Canada and then got mixed up with the distillery business during Prohibition. Essentially, what you have with the Bronfmans is this sort of clawing upward, right, where they build this massive empire where Crown Royal and all sorts of seltzers are the birthright of Claire and Sarah Bronfman, even though Claire and Sarah are not really the favored children of Edgar Bronfman. They were the children of his third wife, who was a Brit nicknamed George.
My mom comes from a very, I would say, upper, lower class family in England. Didn't really have much. And so I grew up with my mom, and my dad was like the knight in shining armor.
It's a difficult relationship, and it's one that's really at the heart, I believe, and the motivation for Claire to get so deeply involved in Nexium.
I mean, he was everything to me.
Did you see a lot of him when you were young? No. Just short visits?
Very seldom.
Would you go to dinner with him, or would you go on vacation?
It was funny. You know, my dad took us to Domino's Pizza. It was Pizza Hut. Took us to Pizza Hut twice. This is me and my sister. But most of the time, I mean, you know, we would go with him on trips that he would go on for business. And then I didn't see him very much. And then there was a point where I moved to America and I still didn't see him very much. I spent my life wanting to be like my father. You know, I wanted to be successful like my father. I wanted to be, you know, everything that my dad was.
You spent all this time with Claire Bronfman. What was her personality like?
I think that, like a lot of the women in NXIVM, I felt that she was very childlike. She's extremely slight, you know, the definition of mousy, right? Glasses, not very clear eyes behind the glasses. I remember her wearing like white trousers that on anybody else would be tight, but were very, very loose, totally understated.
And super thin.
Super thin. And speaking in almost a whisper most of the time. Again, maybe that was a put on, right? Like maybe it was about she was trying to come off as incredibly kind and gracious to me so that I would think twice about her having, you know, a cruel streak.
One of the things that cults tend to do is try to hollow out the identities of their members and, you know, kind of replace all of that with cult stuff. Who was Claire before she joined NXIVM?
She had been born in New York City, but she grew up on the English countryside and she just got super into animals.
From a very young age, it was just something that I loved. I loved horses more than anything. I loved horses and I loved the connection with them. And so I would spend a lot of time with them. I just was spent more time in the stables than in the house. It was easier. Those things that were going on in the house that were difficult.
She, you know, would jump on the pony bareback in the field and she would sort of gallop around and became a vegetarian, I think, at age 9. Like, she didn't want to eat dead animals. And then she became a competitive show jumper. She did that as a teenager. That's what her life was about. And she took it so far, she ended up qualifying for the Olympic trials. Do you still ride?
You know, it was an interesting thing. I went through the Olympic trials in 2004, and I faced a question that was very hard for me. I had a new horse. He was difficult. And when I would become nervous about something, he would literally just stop. And my trainer at the time said to me, "You have to take a stick and you have to beat the shit out of him. You have to do it once. And if you do it strong enough and hard enough once, you'll never have to do it again and you'll be okay." And I couldn't. I just couldn't bring myself to do it.
Yeah.
So I said, you know, there's got to be another way. And he said, I don't know another way. And I said, well, if it means, you know, winning the Olympics or this is the end of my career, I can't in good conscience be on the Olympic team knowing I beat the shit out of one of my horses. It's just not something I can do.
Right.
What's really just astonishing about this person is, you know, here's somebody who loves animals. She's vegetarian since she's 9 years old. She won't continue in professional show jumping because she doesn't want to hurt the horses.
Right.
And then she joins this cult, which is literally torturing women.
Claire Bronfman's story is one of coercive control as a way of life. When I met Claire, she made a joke to me about how she hated people and that's why she was in equestrian. And looking back, I think, you know, when someone tells you they're a misanthrope, believe them.
Claire is a strange person. She's a strange bird. She obviously took pleasure in attacking people, but did she just get so turned around in her head that she believed that anything that she did against these people was justified because it was all for the greater good of Keith and proselytizing Keith's word? You know, that seems likely as well.
I've always struggled with finding time to manage my finances. At the end of a busy week, the last thing I want to do is spend time budgeting all of my expenses or tracking down customer service teams to cancel old subscriptions I no longer use. But now I use Rocket Money, and it does all that for me. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. With Rocket Money, I have full control over my subscriptions and a clear view of my expenses. I can see all my subscriptions in one place, and if I see something I don't want, Rocket Money can help me cancel it with just a few taps. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/infamous. That's rocketmoney.com/infamous. rocketmoney.com/infamous. Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. All the meals are chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, they're always fresh, never frozen, and unbelievably, they're ready to go in just 2 minutes. You've got more than 35 different options to choose from every week, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. That's not including any of the 60-plus add-ons to help you stay fueled up and feeling good all day long. Factor meals are ready to heat and eat, so there's no prepping, cooking, or cleanup needed. That's right, no dishes. And they're flexible for your schedule. Get as much or as little as you need by choosing your meals every week. Plus, you can pause or reschedule your deliveries anytime, like if you decide to go on vacation or something. So what are you waiting for? Get started today and get after your goals. Head to factormeals.com/infamous50 and use code infamous50 to get 50% off. That's code infamous50 at factormeals.com/infamous50 to get 50% off.
You're listening to Infamous from Campside Media.
So Claire quits show jumping eventually, and then how does she get into NXIVM?
So Claire's sister Sarah had been a little lost, and a friend of hers just recommended NXIVM as like a self-help group, like any, you know, like check out this yoga center, check out this Vipassana retreat, check out, you know, at that time it was called ESP. And so Sarah went and then brought Claire in, and Claire felt like this was also what she had been missing, that this was a place that was going to help her define herself, achieve great things, you know, become the apple of her father's eye and do something good and moral in the world and contribute. You know, she was sort of confused about how to deal with her money. Like, she would go on all these show jumping trips and felt weird that she was the one that had all the money, and she would try to pretend that she didn't. You know, and
show jumping is filled with paupers.
Show jumping, the sport of paupers. And, you know, Keith had sort of sold her on this idea that money itself is not good or bad. It's what you do with the money that matters. So she should stop feeling this guilt over having this money and being on a different level than other people. She should instead get a plane that she could fly everybody in NXIVM around on. And she should contribute her money to NXIVM because that would be a good thing she could do with her money.
So one of the things I asked Keith from the very beginning, I said, I want help becoming responsible. I want to be responsible with my money, and I want to be responsible as a leader because I am a Bronfman.
Right.
And I do have money, and I do care about that. It's important to me.
I think it's just important to realize that, like, Keith had basically taken the place of Edgar in Claire's mind. Like, he became her father. Basically, she was, I think, very much under his thrall.
At one point, she tried to bring her dad into NXIVM. How did that pan out?
she and her sister told her dad that this was this amazing find and they would just love him to take a class. And, you know, the story goes that he was into it and he liked it and he thought it was interesting.
And then Claire let slip to her dad that she'd given Keith $2 million.
The story is that Edgar was angry that money had entered the picture like that. Maybe Keith and Nancy were after the Bronfman fortune and that this made him very angry.
I loaned Nexium some money and my father thought that I wasn't getting a good deal and it pissed him off. I mean, how often does that happen in a normal family where somebody misunderstands something, they get mad? I just have a very potent father.
And then a Forbes reporter wrote a story about Keith being a very strange executive coach, right? Because that was the idea at the time with Nexium was like, okay, we're doing executive coaching. This is for high-level individuals who just want to, you know, supercharge. And the quote was, I think it's a cult.
You know, there's always been controversy around me and my father. Mm-hmm. It's been a big talk of the town. You know, my dad and I had controversy. Mm-hmm. We did. And that was, you know, when he called Nexium a cult. It was a difficult time.
And did you talk to him about it?
Yeah.
I
mean, it's interesting because I actually, you know, my father had a tantrum.
This was seen within Nexium as a horrible breach. It was particularly assigned to Claire that it was her breach, that she had allowed her father to do this. And, you know, from there, I mean, things just went completely haywire.
Anybody who has a sibling knows that sibling fights are unavoidable. But what if every fight you had was under a microscope on a global scale? That's the reality for brothers Prince Harry and Prince William. They'd been each other's closest friends and allies since the death of their mother. But that all began to crack as they married and took wildly different approaches to their royal duties. Wondery's podcast, Disentel, is hosted by comedians Sydney Battle and Matt Bellassai. Each episode unpacks one of pop culture's most iconic celebrity feuds, and they recently took a deeper look into the real reason William versus Harry started. It's actually much bigger than these two brothers, stretching back into the history of the British monarchy. Did their feud start with the royal family's mistreatment of Meghan Markle? Or was it something that began much earlier? Follow Disentel on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Back in the 90s, Pepsi and Coca-Cola were in a heated race to try and win loyal customers by any means necessary. But when Pepsi launched an ambitious promotion that encouraged people to buy Pepsi and redeem points for prizes, they overlooked their own fine print in a major way. On each episode of Wondery's podcast, The Big Flop, comedians join host Misha Brown to chronicle one of the biggest pop culture fails of all time and try to answer the age-old question. Who thought this was a good idea? Like, who at Pepsi thought it would be a good idea to advertise that people could earn enough points to redeem a military jet as a prize? When they launched their Pepsi points system, they never imagined somebody might actually try to snag it. But a 23-year-old did, and suddenly, Pepsi owed him a jet. Follow The Big Flop on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to The Big Flop early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
This is Infamous from Campside Media.
Keith had this perception that Claire had breached her trust with him by allowing Edgar Bronfman to give this quote, I think it's a cult, to the Forbes reporter. Keith and Nancy Salzman started realizing that they'd lost Edgar as an ally, and Edgar was not going to be a door to all of these other wealthy individuals that they were going to bring into Nexium. Keith was getting more and more obsessed with Edgar and wanting to know what Edgar was doing. So Claire and Daniela, who is a young woman whose parents brought her into Nexium, Daniela was good with computers, and so Daniela and Claire and Keith tried to hack into Edgar's computer.
It's pretty interesting. So basically, Keith gets Daniela to do this phishing email, and then Claire sends the phishing email disguised as this cute bear because Edgar called her Claire Bear.
That's right.
So she sends him the picture of the bear, and he's supposed to click on it, but he doesn't click on it.
Right.
So she actually goes to his office, opens the email that she sent him on his computer, and she goes, oh, I really want you to see this picture of a bear that I sent you. And she just, like, goes and clicks on it, and it's done. And then they log all of his keystrokes and get his password for his AOL email address. And then Daniela, for years after that, is giving Keith regular updates on Edgar Bronfman's email contents.
Right. She fancied herself one of the leaders of Nexium, though people that I talked to made it very clear to me that she was really just carrying out Keith's orders. And she sort of positioned herself, or he told her to do, I personally don't know, as sort of the person who would head up the legal issues for Nexium. And the legal issues were mostly related to defectors, people who had left, who needed to be silenced, right, needed to be taken care of, or journalists who were writing negative articles. They relentlessly brought legal campaigns against them. And she was very proud of this. I mean, I did ask her a lot about those cases and how she felt about it and if she regretted it looking back. And, you know, her line was absolutely not, you know, I had to protect the people who are in Nexium. You know, we have very important people here, and it is my job to make sure that they have privacy.
We have A-list actresses who have taken our programs. We have royalty that's taken our programs. We have ex-presidential families that have taken our programs. Plus the regular Tom, Dick, and Harry, you know, like, we respect people's privacy. And that's important to us. And believe me, if we didn't, there's a lot that we could have done. I mean, understand, we know so much about all of our adversaries. We have so much of, so much shit that we could go to town with, and we won't do that.
It's all part of the mission to do good in the world. And Sarah Edmondson, who, you know, is on The Vow, who's been a very, very vocal and persuasive defector, you know, at the time that I was talking to Claire, was one of her, like, sort of objects of ire. And she felt that part of the reason why Nexium had fallen apart and these indictments were coming was due to Sarah overreacting about getting a brand.
Overreacting.
And, you know, she had hired a private investigator to look at Sarah. She had flown to Vancouver to talk to the police to try to get Sarah in trouble because Sarah had some connection to getting a list of Nexium members and trying to warn people about what was happening. So Sarah was actually coming from a place of trying to help.
Right.
Claire had convinced herself that this was, you know, an unwarranted, unjustified attack and, you know, just a bunch of sort of girls being silly.
For example, you know, there's a video of Sarah Edmondson's branding. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's such a lie. Mm-hmm. It's such a lie.
What's a lie?
During she watched two people be branded, so there's no surprise.
Right.
And she was enjoying the whole thing. I mean, there's... Mm-hmm. You know, she was very much involved in it. It wasn't that grimacing for her. I haven't watched it, but I've heard numerous accounts from people who have watched it. What she's saying now is such a bunch of lies. I know that they know that they're lying about certain things. An audio tape of Sarah Edmondson saying that she was happy that she had the brand. I know she's lying. I know these people lie. That's part of the thing that kills me.
She told me she hadn't seen Sarah's branding video, but that lawyers who had seen the branding video were outraged by it because Sarah seemed like she was consenting to the brand, which is, you know, we would later find out there's really no consent when this many gaslighting tricks had been played on you, right? Mm-hmm.
Claire was not in DOS. She was not in the sorority. What did she say about it then?
She said basically what you know, they had all decided to tell me, which is this was a women's only sorority. They had agreed to keep it secret in order to help a woman who had been having some mental issues and was almost suicidal. So her friends wanted to help her, and they created this secret women's society, which was about telling her that other people were there for her and enslaving her because that would help her not feel depressed and alone, which is a number of mental gymnastics that's like really hard to calculate the number of backflips that they just did there. But
and at the same time, if you're like in that mindset all the time, if you're so deep in the cult,
right,
that seems you're normal. Used,
right,
it's logical.
You're used to irrational things being explained to you as completely rational.
Up is down.
Right.
So at the time that you met Claire, this was really like the last gasps of NXIVM. What was her experience of the end of NXIVM like? I mean, right after you talked to her, suddenly everyone around her is getting arrested.
Well, I think she was completely freaked out. And, you know, her idea was just like, throw money at this, right? And more experts, and we'll get doctors in here to say these women are healthy, and we'll just turn this around just the way we've always turned everything around. She probably thought she would never get indicted. You know, she had hired an attorney who was very close with the prosecution, so she was very aware of what the charges were that they were looking into, the likelihood that this indictment was coming. She'd been told all this stuff by lawyers who were getting inside information. But I believe that till the end, she really thought that it wasn't going to happen. Because the charges against her, you know, they weren't sex trafficking. I mean, they were visa violation, forced labor with some of the women that, you know, were being used as maids, basically, by NXIVM. Truly horrible things that they did to these people. And she's thinking, I'm going to go to prison for a visa violation? Like, what is happening here? When Claire was arraigned, she was being held on a $100 million bail because she was a flight risk. She could just go to Teterboro. You know, you won't know where she is. She'll be gone before you know it. You know, Claire had purchased an island in Fiji where NXIVM had talked about trying to create their own currency, create their own, you know, country. There was a sense of maybe, you know, they would go to a country where there was no extradition treaty. And the judge was so thoroughly revolted by her. And it was this really stunning scene. We're all in downtown Brooklyn, and this is quite a large courtroom. And he really, like, reamed her out. And he just felt that for somebody who had been given everything, who was born with a silver spoon, who had this father who had done so much for the world, to turn around and be taken in by this total moron, Keith Raniere, and then to have turned into a henchwoman for him and done all these horrible things to women who were lower on this weird status totem pole of NXIVM than her was just a crime against humanity. And when she was sentenced, he went far over what the prosecutors had asked for. So the prosecutors had recommended 21 to 27 months, which is a hard prison sentence, but not that hard. It's like 2 years, right? And the judge sentenced her to 81 months, almost 7 years.
So having spent so much time with her, what do you imagine she's thinking now? Do you imagine she is still devoted to Keith or has somehow managed to pull herself out of that while she's been in prison?
Well, I think as of a year or two ago, it's, you know, was reported that it's likely she's still paying Keith's attorney bills. I have no knowledge of anybody receiving a letter saying she no longer believes in Keith. So as far as we know, she does still believe in Keith and probably is still doing the practices of penance and, you know, all the self-starvation and all the stuff that they did in Nexium?
I believe in this technology. I believe in what it can do in terms of changing people's lives.
Next week on Infamous, Gabriel Sherman takes us into a story filled with private jets, dinners with dictators, and the guy who may have carried Bill Clinton's lip balm.